AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at rubrik.com. That's rubrik.com.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of the Greasy Pigeon Podcast. I'm your host, Jeff Sullivan. With me, as always, wearing the red instead of the Blue Jay blue tonight, the one and only Kevin Trussler. Kevin, are you feeling a couple games into the LCS? You're still on mute, buddy. You ruined the whole intro.
Well, Jeffrey, it was a great comeback the other evening. I'm wearing the red Leaf jersey because it is fall. I figured, we'd go with the seasons.
Seasons. Oh, I'm going to pretend it's just a regular leaf falling from the trees, not a Canadian-specific leaf tonight.
That would be a maple leaf, for sure.
Yeah, maple leaf. Wonderful. Well, appreciate you and supporting our friends from the north as the Blue Jays continue their series with the Mariners. But that is all the baseball talk you get from us today. Well, actually, today, maybe not. We are joined. Our guest is with us already today because we want to devote as much time as we can to Chris Goodman, repeat Ness guest for us here on the Greasy Pigeon Podcast. He came early, 20 plus episodes ago. Chris was on with us talking about mental performance. He is a certified mental performance coach, currently works for the Tampa Bay Rays. Going to definitely talk a little bit on get his experience from the professional athlete side, but also for you parents and players that are listening, how it ties in directly to your game. He spent a lot of time coaching with us in the past and working with U14, U16 players on the mental side of the game of hockey. Great asset to have on the show today. So grab a pen and paper, get ready to take some notes. He's going to give you tips and tricks. I know he will. On how you can be better on the ice or how you can get your player to be better on the ice. So, Chris, after saying all that, welcome to the Greasy Pigeon Podcast again, my friend. Thank you for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me back. It must have been fairly good the first time, or we just needed to run it back so that we could see each other. We used to get to see each other around this time of the year, like every week. Now we don't. So I appreciate you having me back.
Absolutely. And if you're watching us on YouTube, it's very obvious. And if you're not watching us, I just want to point out, we did not talk about this beforehand, but I guess coaching habits die hard. We are all essentially in uniform. We're all in red shirts. I mean, Kevin and I have the hat on like usual, right? But we look like we planned this. We look like we're a team. And I guess that's what happens when you spend so much time together this time of year in the locker room and on the bench. So I guess that says something.
Osmosis, baby. We know. One step ahead.
Absolutely. I probably, if I knew that Kevin was going to wear his Canadian Maple Leaf shirt, I wouldn't have wore red, especially after the Four Nations tournament. I'm still a little bitter about it. It was such a cool thing to watch, but obviously cheering for USA, and again, Canada got the best of us.
It was a great ending. Great ending. What do you say?
We all had to endure weeks of that from one Mr. Trussler. So
yeah, and then the World Juniors, and you have the flowers here. The U.S. is definitely nipping at the heels. So more to come.
For sure. Well, listen, before we get into the hockey side and the youth hockey side, we'd like to open it up with you, Chris, on kind of the professional side, right? Like, it's such a broad topic, but the Rays were going through a lot this year. Just what were some of, the top one or two, because I'm sure there was, 5,000 things that you dealt with the players throughout the season, right? But what were some of the things that even the elite athlete this season kind of stand out in your head that you had to deal with, and how did you help kind of navigate through that? Kind of to show that even the top of the top still deal with a lot of the same things that our youth and our beginner players deal with.
Yeah. So for starters, right, being outside in Florida, like that was probably the number one thing, is the heat. It didn't matter if we were playing at night because it was super humid. And a lot of the times as well, we were doing our early work. And we had to modify that as well, of course, because we're getting to the stadium, let's say, you know, 7:30 game or so. We're getting to the stadium around 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock. And then we have BP, which we started to modify. More guys started to hit in the cage versus outside, but guys need to get their ground ball work in, their fly ball work in. So you got to be outside at some point, and you're in the heat, you're in the sun. It's 100% humidity, whatever it is, and you're baking out there. And so that certainly takes a toll. And then when you're going out there to compete, it's just nonstop sweat. You know, our pitchers are going through 3, maybe 4 jerseys, depending on the guy, like every single day, every single night. Our catchers, same type of thing. So that right there, and I think that aspect, just like anybody, you don't, not just a professional athlete, is you, when that happens and you're in the heat like that, your mind is going to, how can I get out of this, right? Like your mind's trying to keep you comfortable. So it's working against you. So that was the number one thing. Then 2 is probably just the environment. It's a spring training setup, though it was beautiful, really. Like the inside, you could not have wanted more. The training room, amazing. The weight room, amazing. The clubhouse, it looked great. Like the Yankees obviously have done a great job there. And then our staff did a really good job of putting so many, like, our touches on it. It didn't look like the Yankees place. It had Rays things all over. But it was also spread out because it's very spring training-esque. So that is a different kind of aspect, as well as there's just like nooks and crannies. Like you're in corners because there's needs to be a lot of space. So those 2 things would be the number one thing. How do you create a culture or keep a culture when it's so spread out? And then also as an individual and team, getting worn down by the heat and the external factors, and like staying gritty or mentally strong, I guess buzzwords there, but like truthfully, and also resilient.
So going to the professional athlete, like we know it was this time of year last year when the storms came through, did you have to prep you and your staff as far as being able to prepare the athletes going into the season, knowing that, you know, their routine for the returning players is going to be, you know, it's completely different. You know, it's on the other side of the bridge. You know, when did that start as far as getting to the athletes and preparing them for a season that's going to be one for the ages, really?
Well, I think if I can totally remember, it happened pretty quick where once the trop was damaged, like there were some messages being sent out via, you know, like a Teamworks type of thing, just communicating with everyone that like we were going to be looking for places to play, like hopefully in the Tampa Bay area. So obviously there were things floated about Miami or like even outside of the state of Florida. And when we really wanted to be able, our organization and Major League Baseball wanted to play in Tampa Bay and find a way to do that. And then as things started to develop and Steinbrenner became more of a reality, more of those conversations were talked about of like, there's going to be odds stacked against us. And the park is very different dimensionally than the trop. And obviously you have the outside factors as well, but just you're playing in Yankee Stadium minus the third deck. So the wind plays differently as well. So maybe your team, and I don't want this to make this seem like an excuse or anything like that, but like, you know, you build your team a lot of the times based off of the stadium you play in. And we still have had and have pitchers to go get the job done. We didn't do as well as we would have liked, of course. Those things just played factors, and you have to adapt. And those conversations happened pretty early on.
So you're talking a lot. It sounds like you're talking a lot about kind of that mental toughness piece, right? Like you talked about it from the fact that, you know, you're outside, the weather, the external factors are kind of are closing in on the athlete, and then the facility, and then, you know, the things that change, and all that's in the head. And that trickles down to the youth player, right? So when you talk about mental toughness in youth sports, and specifically youth hockey and the hockey player, I mean, from your perspective as a coach who deals with the elite athlete and who has dealt with the junior hockey player, or the youth hockey player, what does that really mean to you? What in your mind is really true mental toughness?
That's a really good question. And there's so many different definitions, right? And everyone might have a little bit different. I think mental toughness is going to come down to an athlete, a performer's ability to be prepared and present for when it's time to compete. And however they do that And like, if they can understand themselves to be able to do that more often than not, then I think they are, they have mental toughness there. So again, like I would say performance comes down to preparation and presence and how you are doing those things, staying the discipline to stay in that preparation, the routines and the habits that you have, and then the routines and habits that you have to stay present when you're competing.
So to lead into that, for the youth hockey player, there are now two tournaments in a lot of the teams, right? Yeah, Labor Day, we just had Columbus Day. For those that are feeling the strains of maybe they're playing up in the AA for the first time, or maybe they're on a travel team for the first time. For the coaches out there that'd be listening to try to get to their athlete, to try to get them to, you know, peak performance or get out of their head, what are some suggestions that you feel would be right for the youth to make that happen?
Yeah, well, I think for starters, right, again, going back to preparation and presence. So I think in order to be really present in what you do, you're going to, especially sports and like specifically hockey, let's say hockey, is you're going to have to be resilient. And so I always think of these three C's when it comes to resilience. Right? Resilient performers would do these three things or connect with these three things often. The first one is commitment. Do they know what they're committed to? And they connect with that often. So you can certainly do some like macro commitments of, let's say, these youth hockey players, maybe they have aspirations to play college hockey. Great. That's a bigger picture commitment. What are you going to do today that gets you closer to that? You can't go play college hockey tomorrow because you can't be enrolled in college yet. But what can you do today that allows you to get closer to that? And by the time you lay your head on the pillow, you could ask yourself, did I get better today? How did I get better today? Great. Then on a smaller like scale of commitments, maybe today it's practice. What are you committed to getting better at in practice today? Now, those things, the macro and the micro, are certainly going to go hand in hand. But being able to identify that and be intentional with it is really impactful. So again, commitment. Then the second one is control. And this is, it's so fundamental. Coaches talk about it all the time, rightfully so. It's like control what you can. And every kid's going to, you know, if a kid's listening to this, they might eye roll it. It's like, it's 100% true. If you don't focus on the things that you can control, the things that you can't control will start to control you. All right. So you have to make sure, and it's really hard to focus on the things you can control because there's so many things that you can't and they pull from you. But the things that you can control, attitude, effort, perspective, preparation, energy, effort, like those things, they matter. And that's like, it's the ground level. You can have all the talent in the world, but if you don't bring the things that you can control, the time is just super limited. Time's limited already, but the players, the athletes, performers that totally control that aspect, take care of that, like that's, I think they maximize their ability more so than not. And then lastly is challenge. Can you view things as a challenge rather than a threat? So now you're looking more at like, it's opportunistic. This is an opportunity for me to grow. All the challenges, the adversity that comes up every single day, whatever it might be throughout a season, it's how you get better. Hey, how we respond to this is going to make a difference. So like, if you think, if these players, right, I go back to the example of if you wanted to be a college hockey player, okay, in order to do that, you are going to have to go through pains and setbacks and challenges. It doesn't just come easy, even for the most talented guys. I got to imagine it's not easy to do it. Even like, I'm dating myself at this point, but like I think of like Sidney Crosby. He went to Shattuck St. Mary's up in Minnesota. And then I think of those guys, and they, though they were super talented, they had to go through challenges. It wasn't always easy for them. And I think it's important to note that challenges are relative. We might view it as like, that guy didn't go through anything, but in his head, he was like, I went through a lot. And that's probably more important, because now he can view that as, okay, I went through all of this, I can handle the next step.
Well, and it's so important how that ties to the youth player. So give them all this, you know, you gave them all those kind of steps, you gave them things to think about, you gave them kind of tools to put in the toolbox to go out there and perform. But then they have to perform. And kind of a two-part question, and I don't know if you want to take them kind of both at the same time or break them down, but like the first thing, right, the players on the ice, they're between the boards, they're between the glass. they may feel like they're not meeting expectation. Maybe it's their expectation. Maybe it's a parent expectation. Maybe it's a coach's expectation. They're not feeling like they're meeting that. So what kind of, what's your advice to that player to, you know, get through that mental hurdle, right? Because they may be playing just fine. Or as we know, the score sheet is not the only thing that dictates a good performance. So there might be that mental side. And then when you're talking about a youth hockey player, what is the other side of the youth hockey player, the parent, the car ride home, and the conversations there, and the pressures that the parents then put on, because maybe the parents, Johnny didn't put up 7 goals today. What's wrong with you, Johnny? But meanwhile, he had 4 great defensive plays and a back check that stopped a goal, right? Whatever. So like I said, it's kind of 2-part question. They kind of go together. So handle it how you want to, Chris. But kind of what's your conversation around those two topics?
So ultimately, you're asking, like, how does an individual themselves handle the pressures, and how do parents, or how does the individual still handle the pressures from parents?
Yeah, more so on the hockey player and the player end, how do they handle their own head telling them they're maybe not doing what they think they should be doing? And then how do they handle when the external pressure, the parent, is coming down on them also?
Absolutely. Okay. So I think the first thing that I would go to is that, is this player even tracking the progress that they're having? Right. Like, or are they only looking at the external, or like the traditional statistics, like you mentioned, right? Of like, okay, goals, assists, like all those things. Is that all you're looking at? Because there's a lot of different ways to impact a hockey game, and it doesn't just show up on the score sheet. So are you looking for those things? One thing that I've done in the past with players, whether it doesn't matter what sport, is because there's always traditional statistics, and then you can find like your process statistics. What things allow you to get those statistics? But we're really going to focus on the process statistics here. So if it's goals and assists or whatever, what do we have to do that? It might be in order, like, okay, I'm going to have to, or this thing just popped in my head is like, okay, I want to stay off the minus side, like the plus and minuses. Well, in order to increase your chances of staying away from minuses, I probably should back check. So how often did I back check to the middle of the ice? Like, what was my effort level? Let's track that, right? But then also, how often did I headman the puck? Or how often was I, what was my forecheck like? What was my effort like driving to the net? Like, if goals are important, which they are, right? But doesn't matter how you get them. That's what I would ask a player is like, if goals are so important to you, doesn't matter how you get them. Garbage goals count as goals too, but like you have to be willing to kind of mix it up in front of the net, and not everyone's willing to do that. But if your goals are what they truly are, then let's be willing to do those things. And like, so did I find myself in front of the net? But so ultimately, those types of things, let's look at the process aspect of what it takes, moving our feet. And you can rate yourself, like if I was working with a hockey player on those things, it would be, let's rate ourselves on a scale of 1 to 10 for those process statistics. So moving my feet, what was it? Like, okay, 7. Great. What would it take to move it to an 8, a 9? Getting in front of the net, those types of things. Headmanning the puck, getting the puck deep. Those things matter to being a good hockey player. So that would be a little bit of like, okay, let's take away from the overall traditional statistics and paint the whole picture. And then also on the parent side is being able to evaluate some of that external noise. And I think this really comes down to like the age of the player, probably, is their ability to have that like open communication with their parent on that. And I guess for parents listening is, and we were just talking about this before we started recording, like I'm a new parent. So I by no means, like my son is not ready to, he can't walk. So he's not going to be on the ice just yet, but hopefully in maybe a couple months.
You're falling behind. That one AAA team's already got tryouts. You're falling behind.
Yeah. No kidding. We're behind on it. So what I would say with that is, a lot of the times, and I've learned this from other performers as well, is just like understanding their family dynamics and their parental dynamics, is parents' self-talk or what they focus on. And this is a no-brainer, right? Like the kids focus on. If the parents only focus on goals and assists and those statistics, like let's not be surprised when our kids are hyper-focused on that. And it's not necessarily all bad by any means. I'm not like pointing fingers, like those stats matter. I get it. But there's also a lot of things like, let's focus more on like, how are we going to get it? And so I would say like, can you have that communication, that car ride of like, all right, what things can we are more controllable, to go back to that piece? So there's probably a lot to that. So I don't know if I totally answered it, but I would start with that process line type process statistics. And I think that would like, hopefully parents can grab onto that too.
And I'll add, like, I mean, at the end of the day too, for the coaches, right? Coaches listening, like you have to have that communication with every single player and set those expectations with both player and parent. And you can't start that, you know, soon enough. Like it used to drive me nuts when I heard that parents were paying for goals or assists. It, you know, it's me over we. And, you know, at the end of the day, fundamentals, as you start out, you need to be fundamentally sound, learn to play the game the right way. And then those things will happen. The cream does rise to the top. And, you know, there are natural goal scorers out there versus non-natural, but you know, it's so important, I would think, like as a coach, to communicate that. And, you know, the message of the team and the message to each player, it's so important. Cause you're the one that's on the bench, you see it. And, you know, if I know when I was a head coach, I had multiple assistant coaches, and you know, same when it was flipped. We took the time to read the bench, to read the body language. You know, you got to get to the kid before it becomes too late. And if a parent's getting involved, then, you know, you need to sit them down as well.
Well, and what it does too, is it changes as the game changes. So like with Kevin, with your son playing college hockey and Sully playing junior hockey, and you look at the collegiate game and the pro game, yes, goals, everyone gets excited about goals. But if you really look at, and I know that on Instagram and TikTok, that proves what I say incorrect, because that's all you see is the goals and all that and the big hits. But what gets the bench going?
No saves.
Well, first of all, no saves. But although did you see John Gibson out in Anaheim make the save and then the behind the back catch in midair? If you haven't seen it, go check that out. That was a hell of a save the other night. But anyway, what gets the bench riled up as the game progresses, the block shot, mm-hmm. the stick in the lane deflection that looks like to the average person a nothing play, like, oh, okay, he deflected the puck out of play. No, he broke up a 3-on-1 or a 3-on-2 or the pass across the zone. You know, when a goalie has an active stick and breaks up that backdoor pass, you know, and knocks the puck to the, it looks like nothing, because before you know what happened, the play's going the other way, but you just took a goal scoring opportunity off the board, right? So as the game progresses, those process goals, if I remember what Chris called them properly, actually start to have a much bigger impact in the flow of the game and a much greater impact in the outcome of the game than strictly the goal and the assist, right? So I think that's important, Chris, to what you were saying before on how it kind of all comes full circle down the road.
Absolutely. And you mentioning the block shots, like that's a huge one that I miss when it comes to those like process goals, that process statistic. And it really reminds me, this is now taking from a different sport in football, and Bill Belichick, who famously would talk about, is like, he would tell every team that, and multiple times throughout the season, probably multiple times throughout practices, that we can't win until we can keep from losing. And I think that's a really important thing. Like, I hold on to that a lot and have said that, shared that with a lot of different players over the years, because it's not only for the physical side, it's the mental side as well. So yes, we can't win until we can keep from losing. So losing hockey is not blocking shots. Losing hockey is not back checking. Losing hockey is selfish hockey. Maybe trying to make an extra move at the blue line or like turnovers in the neutral zone. Like, that's losing hockey. It might not show up right away. Like, not every turnover in the neutral zone ends up in a scoring opportunity for the other team, but you do it enough, you're in trouble. But I think also the mentality as well is like, because that also ties into, you can't control your performance until you're in control of yourself. And so like losing mentalities also, to connect to like those three C's of resilience, there's also like non-resilient C's, which are complaining, comparing, and catastrophizing. Do those three things a lot, you won't win, not just a game, but like in the career. Those things don't add up to high performance. And so I think like that as well is like, are you looking at that? And you can kind of gauge, how often am I on the resilient C's of commitment, control, challenge versus the non-resilient C's of comparing, complaining, and catastrophizing.
Well, and just to close the conversation on this topic, I know we could go on forever on it, but how many times do you see, you know, the player in the game that takes the extra cross check behind the play or gives the, you know, the forearm or the punch to the back of the head or to the player's face, right, as the play goes away, because they had to get the last shot in, right? They had to be the bigger man in that scrum and the bigger player, and I got to give you one extra, and then they're in the box. And like you said, it may not turn into a goal that power play, but how many of those happen in a game? And next thing you know, you've given the other team 5, 6, 7 power play opportunities, and they've scored on one of them, two of them at least, right? So now you're hurting your team on the other way. And we've seen that happens a lot at the junior level, right? Kevin's lived that life for a couple seasons. You know, I'm currently in that life. Like, if you stay out of the penalty box, you're going to win a lot more hockey games, kids. Like, that cross check or that slash didn't get you anywhere except down 2 goals. So what are we doing this for, right? It's kind of that same mindset. I think it all plays together.
Hey, beauties, season started. Not getting the birds to chirp your way? Head on over to greasypigeon.com for some gear.
You know, it's interesting with golf too. I forget what pro it was where, you know, a lot of people are so critical of their own self that they don't give themselves enough credit to what they bring to the table. And, you know, that's a tough thing for some people. Like, no matter how good they do, they're going to find something wrong with what they did. You know, how important is that for the athlete you got to reward yourself and realize that that one turnover that you did, hey, it's in the past, right? The 5 good plays that you did before then, you know, focus on those. Learn from the mistakes, but, you know, don't dwell on them.
Yeah, it's super important. I think a lot of the times we learn through, like, our coaches as well. And I think we could all look to a certain coach or multiple coaches that we really enjoyed that were really, really hard on us. I know I can. Like, some of my favorite coaches were, like, the hardest coaches on me and our team. Like, some other guys really didn't like them because they were super hard. And everyone has a different, like, style that they like. I enjoyed that, but I also found, like, even over my career, there were times when I was way too hard on myself because I thought that's what actually got the most out of me, because that's what that coach was able to get out of me. But it's not always the same for yourself. And so you have to be able to look at, like you're saying, Kev, is like, all right, are you noticing the 5 plays that you, like, did really well versus the one, right? Like, and I think that ability to move on quickly, especially in game, right? That one shift that was bad, does it turn into 3 shifts that are bad? Or can we leave it at 1? And so the ability to go off, you know, into the bench, like, reflect on what happened and, okay, this is what I'll do next time. Because I think that aspect of, you have kind of, maybe let's call it venting. And so we all have vented before. So, but what can happen is you just stay in that negative emotion versus, all right, negative emotion, which, fine, like, we have to be able to look at the reality of it. I don't want players and performers to think, like, it's all about sunshine and rainbows and, like, we're getting crushed right now. It's 5-0. We're playing terrible. And it's like, hey, guys, like, good job. Like, no, we're not playing well. Like, we're not doing the right things.
That's our golf game.
Hey, chicken, right. Chicken fingers, french fries. Wait till the cart girl goes.
Well, we're going to get DQ after the game no matter what. Don't worry, guys. But I think, like, our ability to look at that and say, okay, yes, negative emotion, but now what are you going to do about it? That's one of my favorite questions to ask at some point with players. They vent to me. And, like, this isn't going well. This is BS. Like, I'm getting wronged here. The umpire's screwing me. Okay, like, so what are you going to do about it? Like, legit, what can you do and what will you do? What are you going to choose to do? You can stay in this, or next time, this is what I'm going to do, right? Like, the guy who comes off the ice and he's pissed because he made a neutral zone turnover and, like, he's getting crushed by his coach is like, because he knows as well. And he's like, all right, next time I'll get it in deep. Like, not the extra move. Like, I think that actual, like, talk, that's internal dialogue of next time, let's move on then, but let's take the lesson and let's move on. And if there were things that you were able to find well in the shift too, find them. So really easy reflection that people can do well, better, how. or that how can turn to next time. So what'd you do well? Maybe the only thing that you did well was move your feet. That's important. Like, take it for what it's worth. That's part of winning hockey, right? Or I blocked a shot. Okay. Yeah, that's huge. All right. What could I do better? All right. Could have got it like up and out. Could have chipped it up off the glass, like up and out. That would have been a lot better than trying to make a move. And then I turn it over and we're still, now we're in our defensive zone for another 30 seconds and everyone's gassed. And then, so next time, what will I do? So really easy. You can do that probably in less than a minute.
Well, and it's funny because last time we were on the golf course together, it was in a joking manner, but it was needed. We brought out the whole, what color are you looking at on your golf ladder? Yeah. Is it green? Right. And
it was red, Chris.
It was red. Oh, it was red, baby. It was red like the shirts, but, you know, but based on what you just said, and talking about the player and in the moment and coming to the bench when, you know, maybe the coach is John Adam because they did make that mistake and they were out there too long or they didn't make the right play or whatever. Can you rehash, and you did cover the red green a lot on the last episode because we really wanted to hammer it home because I feel like it's super important for the youth player. But because I feel like it's so important, can you kind of rehash the red green conversation, the sticker conversation there that you gave to our U16 team today, and kind of, you know, give the kids that are listening the high level on what that means and how they can use that for their benefit.
Absolutely.
And also the adults that drive in Florida.
Just there you go. Yeah, for sure.
Green sticker. Right. Sorry.
Yes.
Yeah, I digress.
Yeah, so absolutely. So the internal stoplight, right? And this really is attached to awareness. And high level performers are very aware of who they are, what makes them tick, what gets them off their game, when are they at their best? So, right, this internal stoplight. So you do have green, yellow, and red. And so green is when you're flowing, you're in the zone. It's like when you're driving and it's a green light, you don't even think about it. You just keep on going. So let's keep doing that. But it's important to identify what things go into green. So oftentimes players and performers, when they're in the green zone or green lights, they're probably very present, or they're process focused, or they are either, like, depending on the guys, like positive or productive, right? So again, present, process, and let's say productive, right? And so those three P's can be very important. Not one of those will probably resonate with at least some players. It's like that present, oh, I'm so locked in to just my job, what I'm doing. It has nothing to do with these external factors and external noise. It's just right now in the present, or what my process is of, like, if you're a right wing, like, I know my assignment. I'm a center. I know what I'm supposed to be doing. If we're on the power play as a unit, like if we're in the green, it's because we're probably focused. We're very focused on what our jobs are, what we're trying to do. So those really important. Ultimately, the green zone, you're in control of yourself, right? Then when you start to slip into yellow and red, you start to come out of control. So yellow, you're losing some control. And again, if you're aware of yourself and you know yourself, you know what things start to kind of take you out. So for Kevin, right? Like when you miss that 5-foot putt, like yellow, like
how about 2-foot? Caution.
3-foot putt. Yeah.
Right. So doing that right there is like, oh, okay. I know that this generally kind of gets me to start losing control, where maybe I fall into these other three P's, which these go into either yellow or red, where you're trying to be too perfect, or you're just praying, I just hope that this goes well, rather than, again, focus on, like, my process. When you step up, we'll still go golf here. When you step up to the ball, you're about to putt this, is like, okay, are you focused on your read, right? And then your tempo, or are you focused on, like, man, I really hope that this goes well. I hope that's a good read. And I hope that if I sink this, now I can talk some trash to Jeff, right? No, like, we got to be in the process. So there's prayer, but then lastly, there's primal, right? Things aren't going well, so I'm just going to swing as hard as I can, right? Now, next hole, I got the driver. You know, screw it, man. I'm just going to let it rip. And there's no control. And sometimes that can work. And then we get fooled and, like, that's what it's all about. And if we're going golf, I'll take what Tiger said one time. He's like, you only swing as hard as you can, with the driver specifically, if you can consistently hit it on the sweet spot, right? And that you can be balance. So it's balance and sweet spot. That if you can't do those two things and swinging as hard as you can, like it's out of, like throw it out type of thing.
Yeah.
So I need that lesson too. Trust me, I fall into that all the time.
What color is Kevin in when he walks to the green with four clubs and his ball's 30 yards off the back?
I was just in one of these. Question. Don't hold up the group.
Yeah, move it along, move it along. It's okay to play bad, just don't play slow.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
So those things right there, right? Green, yellow, red. And you have to understand like what gets you in those and then what's going to allow you to get out of it. And so everyone kind of has, or if you've gone through this, is like my goal for people and performers is if once you identify the signal lights, what helps you get out of it? Now having like a bounce back routine. So that could be as simple as like, okay, let's go hockey. Now you come off of a shift and you're frustrated. It didn't go well. You recognize like, oh, okay, I had a turnover or I missed a pass. Like I should have, or it was a backdoor and I totally missed it. That should have been a goal. I'm frustrated. I get back. Maybe I'm in yellow or red, losing control. All right. I'm aware of that. And then I'm going to take the ice off of my blade. Like my stick blade, like wipe that off and I'm going to let it go. Like that's signaling to me that I'm ready to move on. But I don't do that until I've gone through the reflection piece so that I can get back to green. Now I'm going to get present. I'm going to focus on my process and I'm going to be productive for the next shift. So again, the internal signal lights, it's really about awareness so that we can be at our best more often.
And how important it, like, as you get older and you play more competitive and you have the leaders on the team, like for them, you see the teams that win and they truly look like they are a family. It's because they have each other's backs. They see when, you know, Jeff is going through a tough time, like, don't worry about it. We got you, like on to the next type of deal. And it's just so important for teammates to recognize that, you know, specifically in team sports. It's not an individual that will win a game. In some cases, yeah, a goalie will win a game. If they're getting shelled and it's a 1-0 game, then the goalie probably stood on his head and won that. But you know, in the end, you got to be aware as to what your teammate's going through as well. And I think it's just so important to be able to recognize that, both as a teammate and as a coach, to pick them up. You know, that's where the success is, right? Jeff didn't pick me up at the golf game. He didn't pick me up at all.
Well, if you guys were competing against each other, then right, like probably wouldn't. But the best leaders, whether it's coaches, other players, I think they understand that emotions are contagious. And so when they see their teammate or they see their player in a red or yellow light, okay, their thought goes to how can I help? What's the best thing I can do to get them closer to green? And I think that's where sometimes we fall short as teammates or as coaches is that's not the first thought that we have, or we're not totally appreciating who is that player and like where might they be at right now. And then we try to like treat them all the same. And that's, again, these are just opinions really, but I don't know if you can treat them fairly. But I can't treat every player this exact same.
It's tough. It's specifically at the youth level, right? And, you know, as puberty and everything becomes more and more involved, there's some that peak a little bit earlier than others. And, you know, it's tough to tame the tiger, but it's also tough to put a stripe on a kitty cat.
Absolutely.
So I want to slightly change gears into a different position. And I know we're coming to the end here. So just one or two more questions for you, Chris. I appreciate it. We've talked a lot about the player, the shift and what they can do and how they can reset and how they can perform and stay green and stay positive. But there's another position on the ice that really deals in the mental space more than anybody else, right? And I'm talking about goalies. And yes, this is 100% a selfish takeover of my own show, so everyone can deal with it. But, you know, working and Sully has worked a lot with you personally, of course, and through the past, and you've been a big asset to him. And watching people like Carey Price and Braden Holtby, right? He's established some of these mental reset or mindful resets where, you know, he squirts the water in the air, watches the droplets fall, and kind of uses that as his release piece, right? When things go bad, or sometimes if it's bad enough, and, you know, he'll actually take his helmet off and kind of get a brief timeout from the ref when he can, you know, kind of fix his hair and wipe his face and then put his helmet back on. And then it's like, go back to work, right? That's literally the only break those guys get in net, mm-hmm. right? At any level. So what can they can't use the same tips necessarily in the flow of the game. They don't have that downtime as a player does sitting on the bench for the next 2 minutes or whatever. But for the goalies listening, for the goalie parents listening, because it's a tough position to be the goalie parent sometimes too, what can you give them as kind of tips or tricks maybe to help that goalie in game get over it? Because sometimes, you know, yeah, great, you let up two today, awesome. Some games you let up more than two. And there's nothing you're going to do about it. And how do you, and sometimes you're the only goalie. We see that a lot in Florida. And thankfully it's getting better as the game is getting bigger. But Sully was the only goalie for a couple seasons. I've seen it still. In those games, you give up 10, 11, 12 because your team's getting shellacked. That is all that. How do you, you know, got to get over that. So what can you give attendee and attendee parent as for advice to be in the right mental space?
Yeah, it is really, really tough. I would equate the goalies to pitchers. You're kind of on an island, in my opinion. And yeah. When things go wrong, a lot of times it's pointed at you. The starting pitcher, like if we give up a 5 spot in the first inning, like that's on you. And then like you wear that and your ERA suffers. And so, but like, yeah, the goalies, they get crushed. There's goals that will happen in a game where it is like, yeah, that's a pretty good goal. Like you got sniped. Like, I don't know what you're supposed to do. And then but then it gets paired with the soft one. Right. And that one is like that crushes, right? And so I think, yeah, they goalies obviously don't have the opportunity to go to the bench to kind of like shake it off or things like that. But I think, and we talked about this a little bit last time, I believe like the two lowest hanging fruits, because you're always going to do it. Every single person is doing it, just not always intentionally. It's what you're saying to yourself and it's your breathing, all right? So I would imagine for goalies, it becomes very easy to like let things speed up. The game might be moving really fast. And if you're totally focused on like, I don't want to like, don't give up a goal, don't give up a goal, or whatever the internal like negative self-talk might be of the don't, is like recognizing that and then flipping that to what's more productive. Like maybe it's more technical. Like, so you have two buckets of self-talk, which is instructional and motivational. Instructional, exactly what it sounds like, is like, I don't know goalie talk, so I won't pretend to do
it. Many people don't.
So like I was a winger. So, and even then it's probably limited at this point, but is it better for that goalie to talk themselves through like what they need to be doing, right? Like, or is it better to be more motivational of like, hey, stay with it, I got it. Like, keep your head up, keep going, keep pushing. Those things are important. And I think, again, go back to for the parents is, like what we talk about becomes their self-talk, right? And like, obviously, I know parents have tried and tried and they will do that. Like, hey, keep going, little Johnny, like you got this. And it doesn't seem like it's working. It's like, over time, I believe in it, right? Like, or focusing on the controllable pieces for them. Like when things aren't going well and 10 spots given up and after the game in the car, whatever it is like, what does the parent say, like, becomes really important. It's like, hey, I love watching you handle yourself through an absolute shitstorm. I know how tough that was. And I loved watching you battle through it. Like, that was massive. That's gonna transfer down the road. Those things. But then also, like, again, the other hanging fruit talked about, like, breathe. Like, when you get a chance and, like, your team's down on the other end, like, are you hyperventilating or is it calm, cool, collected of like, all right, I got this, like, stay with it, keep going. Like those things, that would be my first tip.
Yeah. And just to piggyback on that and maybe offer, you know, what we did to our listening audience with our goalie when he was coming up through, you know, peewees and into, you know, U12s and U14s and U16s, right? But when he was a U12, and a U14 on the inside of his blocker, we wrote in Sharpie, JSTNS, just stop the next shot. Doesn't matter what's already happened. Just focus on the next one. It was like a little visual reset that he could just kind of look down and there it was. And it was just his little mental piece of like, okay, maybe it was a bad one. Maybe it was a good one. Doesn't matter. There's another one coming at me. And that's the only one that matters now. It's again, just like in golf, you could be at 120, but when I hit the next one on the par three, 3 feet from the cup, I'm coming back next Saturday to do it all over again, right? It's that's the only shot that matters, right? So worry about the next one. And then as he got a little older and started to break down his own game on the car ride home, we would, you know, especially if he lost, it was kind of quiet. Hey, great job. You know, awesome job today. And that was it. And then he would start to talk and kind of he would open the door. And my question always to him was, what did you see on X? So it wasn't because I know what I saw from the stands, but as the goalie, that goal went in, especially if it was one maybe I thought he could have had, right? So not necessarily a soft one, Chris, but like one that like I'd like him to make the save on. It was, what did you see? And then he would start breaking down the play to me, but then he would get deeper. It wasn't just technical X's and O's. He got into the whole thing and then he started to open up and then it became a conversation about, you know, then we could offer ideas, tips, you know, whatever else. So it's a game and it's totally age specific. You're not going to do that with a 10-year-old, right? But yeah. It's all age specific on how that goes. So I don't know, just a couple things that we did in our house with the up and coming goalie that, you know, we felt did bear some fruit for him.
Well, I love that you said about like writing it down, like finding a spot to write it. And that's a lot of the times, right? Like whether it's instructional, motivational, like those buckets is then how are you going to remember it? Because we can sit here and talk just like I sit and talk with the professional athletes or any performer. But the thing is, when you get into the arena and now it becomes more emotional, how are you going to remember the logical thinking that you just had a couple hours ago? It's not that easy. So writing it down and being able to look at it is such a simple thing. And it's such a very impactful tool to be able to look at like, oh, yep, we have a lot of pitchers and players. They'll write stuff in their hat. And so then when things are speeding up, they'll take their hat off. They'll look at it. And maybe it's super simple, like next pitch, right?
Just save the next shot. Yeah.
Right. Like, okay, that's very simple in thinking, not always, certainly not easy to do, but can you get your focus to it's the next shot? And that's like, it's the next play mentality, next pitch mentality, next shot mentality.
On the glove, Jeff, did you say the coach should be playing a one first?
It was actually, where's my D on the glove? Oh, yeah. Just wanted to know where the defenseman was.
Question mark. Where's Waldo?
Yes. Yeah. Why is my left defenseman acting as another center? You know, one of those deals.
We're aggressive. But no, I mean, that's like something they use not just in sports, but that's like I said, in driving in Florida, it's crazy when I see people and, you know, maybe I've been one of them every now and then, but like, you got to get yourself back. Is it worth it? Right? Like, what am I doing? You know, because it can go to red real quick. That's for sure.
Absolutely.
And specifically an emotional hockey game. Like I've seen it more often than not. Team that's down gets a bad call against them. And next thing you know, they're down 5-on-3 and the game is done. And, you know, it could have been saved during that time.
Right.
So,
yeah. Hey, Chris, one last question from us before we let you go. And I feel like it's important. It's completely off topic of the game. It's outside the game. But in today's day and age, I see it because of how much time I spend on it with the show and doing content. Social media is a huge player in these kids' lives and the comparisons that naturally want to get made. Why aren't I as good as this kid? Why is that kid better than me? And of course you see the proliferation of all the kids that make the higher teams, the Shattucks and the national development teams and the better teams and AAA this and AAA that. And for, you know, and they're on, I mean, we have followers that engage with our content about the games, you know, that are the player of the 12U team that I, you know, put the video clip up, right? So you've got 10 and 11-year-olds on Facebook and Instagram engaging with the content. So they're seeing it. And of course, if you're seeing ours, you're seeing everybody else's. What advice can you give to, you know, the players and the parents again on managing, I guess it would be expectation, realistic expectation, and just dealing with the social media world we live in?
Yeah. Well, I think for starters, it's really important, I think, to be able to, if you're going to compare, right? We already talked about like, it's kind of part of like the non-resilient C's. comparing, complaining, catastrophizing, but are you comparing your, like, what chapter you're on versus their chapter? You might be on chapter two and that guy is on chapter five. So it's an unfair comparison. But then also, really important, I don't think we're going to stop people from comparing. Actually, probably at times beneficial, because if we never compared ourselves to someone, like, would there be drive to get better? Right? Some people, yes, because they're more internally driven than externally driven. But I think if you're going to compare, we have to compare the right way, meaning that, like, are you going to compare your results to that person or your process? Because I think a lot of the times we'll go and, like, why am I not scoring like that? Or what, like, why don't I, like, play like that guy? Or like, why am I not on this team like them? And it's like, okay, those are end results. What about, like, if you want to compare, like, why am I not preparing like them? Why am I not focused like they are? Let's compare their habits to our habits, because maybe that's the big separator. So, like, I'll give an example. Like, I remember in youth hockey for myself, I was fortunate. I played with some really good players. And fortunately, in Minnesota, there's a ton of good players everywhere. I know we joked about my son, like, not skating yet, and he's behind. Well, I started hockey in second grade, and I definitely was behind. I played with a lot of guys that started skating at, like, 2 years old, maybe even younger, in the state of hockey. And so, but I think one of my teammates who ended up going and playing Division I hockey at the University of Minnesota, he was always so good. His hands were amazing. They were great. And I remember thinking, like, why is he so much, like, I want to be as good as him. Like, why does he get to be so good? And I remember my dad actually saying, like, well, what does he do? How did he get so good? He didn't just, like, obviously there's natural talent and everything like that, but, like, you think he just, like, woke up one day and had mitts like that? Like, no, he couldn't just always dangle like that. What did he do? And so then I started to, I asked him, and he talked to me about, like, his stick handling routine. And so then I started to try to pair that up. So I was constantly, and fortunately my parents didn't get too annoyed of it, but I always had a golf ball in the living room and I was stick handling.
Yeah.
And then I would put, like, little, like, things out, like, pillows are out. Now I'm toe dragging around the pillows. Yeah. The dog, like, I'm bouncing it off the brick fireplace. I'm doing, like, and what do you know? My stick handling got better, yeah. Right? I didn't go play Division I hockey, but, like, I know I got better because of my habits. So again, I go back to, like, the comparison piece. If you're going to compare your habits to those people.
What are you doing when people aren't looking? That, you know, 2 hours of ice time and practice that you have during the week, that's just not going to be good enough if you want to move forward. And I mean that just from a skills perspective, right? You don't need ice per se. You definitely do need to. You need ice. Don't get me wrong.
You need to skate. Like, yeah. I mean, skating is a pretty big piece of high-level hockey, right?
But yeah. That's also, like, all of the non-tangibles you could do outside mm-hmm. of the rink. For those that don't see that, it's, the work is being done in the shadows when you're gaming or, you know, you're out with your buddies, and it's tough. The ones that move on are the ones that sacrifice a ton to get there.
It's all the research, like when Kevin's listening to Chicklets all the time, trying to better his craft, you know, just figuring out what Biz does over there and Wit and all those guys, you know, just really trying to better his game. So when he shows up here every week, he can be
the top shelf,
Kevin catastrophizing Trussler over here is absolutely where we're going
to
go.
I'm just happy to be in the lineup and not a healthy scratch, but, you know, I would understand getting a healthy scratch.
Bench is short, buddy. It's like men's league on a Tuesday night. Well, listen, man, we've had a lot of fun tonight, and obviously mixed in a ton of really good, useful information. I can't wait to get this out to the listening audience and get some clips online, because the stuff you gave us today absolutely is going to help hundreds and hundreds of players as it trickles through. And again, with the socials and the clips and getting the small tidbits out there to drive them to listen to the full episode, because what you said tonight is super helpful. And man, I can't thank you enough. And I'm sure I'm speaking for Kevin too, but can't thank you enough for coming on and joining us tonight.
Yeah, thanks guys. It's always fun to jump on and, like, riff back and forth and also talk the mental game.
Absolutely. It is super important. And it's only going to get more important as we go. So Kevin, I know you've got a baseball game on your horizon, and hopefully for you, a few more coming before the season wraps up.
We'll see. We'll see how it goes. Chris, great having you on. Great seeing you. Looking forward to continuing to watch what you do.
Thanks, guys. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. And Chris, I'm going to, just before we cut off, and this is more for Kevin, but you can chime in if you'd like. Kevin, how's dad doing with the Blue Jays success? Is he on the bandwagon, or what is Johnny doing up there in Toronto?
No, man. You know what's funny? It's like they... And it's more my mom now. Like, she's
really
all in on the Leafs, man.
I'm no
like,
Mom, way.
It's April, or it's October. Let's worry about April when April comes. But yeah, it is. It's hilarious. She's all in on the Leafs and wanted to see the Leafs for my dad to hopefully maybe win it one day, you know. But yeah, it's almost like my brothers are more Jays fans than Leaf fans right now. That's for sure.
Yeah. I'll say that Toronto as a city, I think, amazing. And then the Rogers Centre as a stadium, super underrated. I don't think it gets talked about enough. That place is amazing. And it gets so loud. It's one of my favorite places to go. I know a lot of players really, really love it. The OK Blue Jays song, I don't know if you're that big of a fan, but it's pretty catchy as well.
The seventh inning stretch tune
Yeah, I won't 100%. Sing it, but... Yeah. Yeah, at least not right now. I have sang it, I'll be honest.
I've heard, like, they did upgrades to it. And, yes. You know, my kids were able to go with my in-laws last summer, and they said that they've done a really nice job with it. So, no.
It's beautiful. It's very cool.
It's right in the heart of Toronto, too. That's the best part, you know? It's we'll see. Hopefully they got a couple more games in there, but, you know, time will tell.
Yeah, you can see the CN Tower. I got I went up there. I don't know if you can see this.
There it is. Oh, there's the tower.
I didn't go outside. That's a bit much. But
inside
the CN Tower is very cool.
Yeah.
Very cool. Well, Kev, just when I think I got mom and dad figured out, curveball comes in from left field, and I can't figure them out anymore. So, you know what? All the best of luck to the Trussler clan and whoever they're rooting for. And Chris, I know last week's show, we really hammered Kevin's brother, Chris, because he's a Sabres fan, and we threw out some historic numbers as to how bad their start is so far this year. Let's just say they're on pace to be -265 in the goal differential. So his brother's actually already kind of burning the jerseys, and it's only three games in.
Wow. Yeah, it's pretty early on to be. But if you're on pace for that, hey,
buddy, here we go.
Yeah. On pace for number 15 years not making the playoffs.
That is
going to be a tough one. But, you know, it's early.
All right. Exactly. Well, listen, we have thrown these wheels so far off the bus. I'm gonna try to get this thing parked before we go any further. Chris, again, appreciate you coming on the show, talking to us. Always great having you. Kevin, A+ is always my friend. Best of luck to you. And we'll see you next time in the Pigeon's Nest. Cheers.